Chapter 42. What words are these? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Airedale, regarding her with wonder. Among what associates have you fallen? Into what guilt have you ever been betrayed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am guilty, and yet innocent. Wrong, yet right. Good in intention, though constrained to shield, and a to bad. Ask me no more questions, sir, but believe that I am rather to be pitied than condemned. I must leave my house tomorrow, for while I stay there, it is haunted. My future dwelling, if I am to live in peace, must be a secret. If my poor boy should ever stray this way, do not tempt him to disclose it, or have him watched when he returns, for if we are hunted, we must fly again. And now this load is off my mind, I beseech you and you, dear Miss Airedale, to trust me if you can, and think of me kindly as you have been used to do. If I die, and cannot tell my secret even then, for that may come to pass, it will sit the lighter on my breast in that hour for this day's work, and on that day, and every day until it comes, I will pray for, and thank you both, and trouble you no more. With that, she would have left them, but they detained her, and with many soothing words and kind entreaties, besought her to consider what she did, and above all to repose more freely upon them, and say what weighed so sorely on her mind. Finding her deaf to their persuasions, Mr. Airedale suggested, as a last resource, that she should confide in Emma, of whom, as a young person and one of her own sex, she might stand in less dread than of himself. From this proposal, however, she recoiled with the same indescribable repugnance she had manifested when they met. The utmost that could be wrung from her was a promise that she would receive Mr. Airedale at her own house next evening, and in the meantime reconsider her determination and their dissuasions, though any change on her part, as she told them, was quite hopeless. This condition made at last, they reluctantly suffered her to depart, since she would neither eat nor drink within the house, and she, and Barnaby, and Grip, accordingly went out as they had come, by the private stair and garden gate, seeing and being seen of no one by the way. It was remarkable in the Raven, that during the whole interview he had kept his eye on his book with exactly the air of a very sly human rascal, who, under the mask of pretending to read hard, was listening to everything. He still appeared to have the conversation very strongly in his mind, for although, when they were alone again, he issued orders for the instant preparation of innumerable kettles for purposes of tea, he was thoughtful, and rather seemed to do so from an abstract sense of duty, than with any regard to making himself agreeable, or being what is commonly called good company. They were to return by the coach. As there was an interval of full 2 hours before it started, and they needed rest and some refreshment, Barnaby begged hard for a visit to the Maypole. But his mother, who had no wish to be recognized by any of those who had known her long ago, and who feared besides that Mr. Airedale might, on second thoughts, dispatch some messenger to that place of entertainment in quest of her, proposed to wait in the churchyard instead. As it was easy for Barnaby to buy and carry thither such humble viands as they required, he cheerfully assented, and in the churchyard they sat down to take their frugal dinner. Here again, the Raven was in a highly reflective state, walking up and down when he had dined, with an air of elderly complacency which was strongly suggestive of his having his hands under his coattails, and appearing to read the tombstones with a very critical taste. Sometimes, after a long inspection of an epitaph, he would strop his beak upon the grave to which it referred, and cry in his hoarse tones, "I'm a devil, I'm a devil, I'm a devil!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, but whether he addressed his observations to any supposed person below, or merely threw them off as a general remark, is matter of uncertainty. It was a quiet, pretty spot, but a sad one for Barnaby's mother. For Mr. Reuben Airedale lay there, and near the vault in which his ashes rested, was a stone to the memory of her own husband, with a brief inscription recording how and when he had lost his life. She sat here, thoughtful and apart, until their time was out, and the distant horn told that the coach was coming. Barnaby, who had been sleeping on the grass, sprung up quickly at the sound, and Grip, who appeared to understand it equally well, walked into his basket straightway, entreating society in general
as though he intended a kind of satire upon them in connection with churchyards,
never to say die on any terms. They were soon on the coach top and rolling along the road. It went round by the maypole and stopped at the door. Joe was from home, and Hugh came sluggishly out to hand up the parcel that it called for. There was no fear of old John coming out. They could see him from the coach roof fast asleep in his cozy bar. It was a part of John's character. He made a point of going to sleep at the coach's time. He despised gadding about. He looked upon coaches as things that ought to be indicted, as disturbers of the peace of mankind, as restless, bustling, busy, horn-blowing contrivances, quite beneath the dignity of men, and only suited to giddy girls that did nothing but chatter and go a-shopping. "We know nothing about coaches here, sir," apostrophe John would say, if any unlucky stranger made inquiry touching the offensive vehicles. "We don't book for 'em. We'd rather not. They're more trouble than they're worth, with their noise and rattle. If you like to wait for 'em, you can. But we don't know anything about 'em. They may call, and they may not. There's a carrier he was looked upon as quite good enough for us, when I was a boy." Apostrophe, she dropped her veil as Hugh climbed up, and while he hung behind, and talked to Barnaby in whispers. But neither he nor any other person spoke to her, or noticed her, or had any curiosity about her. And so, an alien, she visited and left the village where she had been born, and had lived a merry child, a comely girl, a happy wife where she had known all her enjoyment of life, and had entered on its hardest sorrows. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.